Fluent and Chill. I'm Fluent and he's Chill. What's going on, Jay? How are you, man?
Nothing, man. Not much going on today, but we got the All-Star game coming up. It's the dog days of the season, so we still got some good stuff going on. We do.
Oh, we had a pretty big game on Sunday too. But that being said, so we're going to talk about. So we got mail drop. We've got some good questions about mail drop. A little bit of basketball, a little bit of football. We're going to talk about the Bengals and the Rams, right? What you saw in the Super Bowl. We're not going to talk about their future because we're going to save that for the offseason. But we're talking about the Bengals, what you saw positive in the Super Bowl, negative. Rams, obviously, what you saw positive, negative in the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about, we're going to get your NBA trades, the best and the worst of the trades that just happened. But first, we're going to take a flight. It's a long flight, I warn you, because we're going to Beijing. And I know we don't talk a lot about the Olympics on our show, but there's two kind of stories for me that I feel that need to be discussed. One of them, in fact, is going to take the place of normally we would do conspiracy. And I put it out there to our listeners and to our viewers, and I said, I want you guys to send me your favorite conspiracies, and we're going to talk about those. So I'm compiling that list, and we're going to just go the ones that are the most popular, and we're going to work our way down our viewers list. So thank you for the people who've already sent those out. We are going to do all of them, I promise. But there's kind of an Olympic conspiracy or story that I want to talk about. First, let's start with the good news story. If I tell you the name Aaron Jackson, does that do anything for your Olympic spirit?
Aaron Jackson, not really.
So I'm going to take a sip of my Nespresso.
Probably should.
And I'm gonna tell you a little story. And I'm going to, it's a much longer story. But there's a girl named Aaron Jackson who started roller skating, like many of us do as we're kids. And she was a pretty good roller skater. So much so that she got into roller derby. And the reason she was so successful at roller derby it's because she was fast. So she got into inline skating.
That helps.
Inline, which is the roller blades, is the name brand, but inline skating. And she started competing and winning because she was really fast. About 4 years ago at the last Olympics, about 4 months before those Olympics, she started skating. They just put her on the ice. And let me tell you, like, looked like a giraffe taking those first steps. Fast forward to 2022 Beijing. She's an Olympic gold medalist.
Oh my God.
Not only that, she is the first Black female speed skater to win an Olympic medal.
How about that?
And the reason I bring that up, like I said, I want to bring up good stories. And when the story got sent to me, they're like, hey, do you guys know? The question was, do you guys know who Aaron Jackson is? And my answer was, no. Looked it up. Great, great story. So I want to give, obviously, a shout out to Aaron Jackson. Go check out her story because it's incredible.
Right. Shout out to Aaron Jackson.
And, you know, hey, the Olympics are going on and we haven't talked about it. And maybe we probably should. But then it brings me to this story. And this is the story that's taking over for the conspiracy theory. So the Russian Olympic team got in a lot of trouble a few years back. Cheating. It's not uncommon. Listen, every country has had some type of doping scandal, something. But so much so that they banned them from competing. However, Russia donates a lot of money to the IOC, who's the International Olympic Committee, who runs the Olympics. So they figured out a way to not let Russia compete, but let Russia compete as the ROC. And I am not talking Rockefeller.
No, not those.
Not that ROC. I'm talking about the Russian Olympic Committee, where they pick athletes and coaches from Russia and they allow them to compete under this kind of like fake committee. It's Russia, guys. It's Russia, but it's now the ROC. And it's to keep, supposedly to keep a close eye on them. It's supposedly to, you know, keep them in line, keep them in check, but allow those athletes who shouldn't be punished for the sins of their fathers, as they say. So I'm going to pause there for a second before I tell you what's next and ask you this. If a country has cheated so often and gotten caught so often that they banned them, shouldn't they just be banned?
That's the idea. And not only is that the idea, that's the idea with everybody. If you get caught doing something, you're done. But there's a way to circumvent the system. And instead of the entire country, so with the Winter Olympics, instead of sending a bobsled team and ice skaters, maybe we'll just send one ice skater as opposed to an entire team. And instead of an entire team of bobsledders, an entire team of snowboarders, nope, we'll just send one. And how will we do that? Well, we'll slip some people some money and we'll go under an assumed name.
Yeah, because no flag, right? No flag, no anthem.
We won't do that. No, we won't do that. We'll go under an assumed name. And what we'll also do is we won't win. Well, we can't do that because if we win, then it's going to draw extra attention to us.
Oh, no, that's wrong. They're winning.
Oh,
not only are they winning, but poor little 15-year-old skater,
mm-hmm.
Kamila Valieva, I hope I said that right, was caught with a banned substance.
Right.
Now I'm going to rewind to the Summer Games where Sha'Carri Richardson, I believe it's Richardson. I want to say Richard or Richardson.
It was Richardson.
Richardson.
Mm-hmm.
Smoked a little marijuana. I believe her mom had passed. She was a little depressed. Yeah. And they said, sorry, we understand, but it's a bad substance. You can't run.
At all. Not like.
Not at all. Yeah. You're done for
the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, I think they would have let her run in the relay if she would have. There was some, because the time that she was banned for, but she was like, forget it. If I'm not running it, I'm not running it. Kamila, however, also caught with a banned substance.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to let her compete.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are they going to let her compete, which they shouldn't. I'm just going to put it out there because she got caught with a banned substance. I said the same thing about Sha'Carri. I said, I don't care the reason. You got caught with a banned substance. Sorry, you can't compete. Now, should that be a banned substance? That's a whole other conversation. But for Kamila, it was like heart medication. Apparently, yes. She needs it. Well, if you need it and it's on the banned substance list, you can either ask for a medical exemption. There's channels you can go through. You can find an alternative drug or you don't compete. I'm sorry. Like if it's on the banned substance, I'm very cut and dry that way. Like with cannabis, I disagree. I don't think it should be on the list, but it is. So how do you fight that? You fight to get it off the list. You don't just take it and say too bad. So I'm not giving any sympathy to what happened. No offense to Sha'Carri. I'm sorry. However, with this one, she's 15 years old. They're going to allow her to compete, even though they shouldn't. Here's the best part. If she medals, oh, and by the way, she's incredible. She's 15 years old and she's the first one to ever land a quad in competition, which is like four. Yeah. However, if she's in the medals, they're not going to have a medal ceremony. So this 15-year-old girl from the ROC gets to compete after being caught with a banned substance, which she shouldn't.
Right.
And not only that, when she does medal, because she will, everybody else loses their Olympic experience for her.
Right.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think, again, like we just talked about, we're talking about a lot of money here, too. So the idea of being able to circumvent the system, right? The idea of being able to circumvent the system and to make things favorable for Russia or the ROC, make things.
No one can say ROC without me doing that, right?
No, you have to throw the rock sign up. Absolutely.
Hova ruined us.
Absolutely. But with that being said, Tone, I look at this situation and I'm thinking to myself, well, damn, how is she able to circumvent the system and other people are not? Well, there's a lot of politics that goes into this. There's a lot of money that goes into it. And there's a lot of people in terms of conspiracies who this is going to help more than anything, because we can't just have a conspiracy and nothing comes out of it for anybody. No. Well, obviously, Olympic prominence is a big deal. So we're talking about a girl who got a heart problem. Now, I'm pretty sure that.
I don't know that. Listen, I don't know that she has a heart problem. Just to be clear.
Clearly, Well, clearly she does, Tone, because if she didn't, she would be taking medication. And if she's taking medication, she had to have a physical. And in order for her to have a physical, we had to find this out. So we found this out. If I'm taking medication, immediately we have to go find out what is on the ban list and what is not on the ban list. We have to find that out. So when they do dope test me and they find out that I'm taking, I don't know, Dramamine. Well, turns out Dramamine is on the list of that I can't have this. Right. It's on the bad substances. I'm sorry. So with that being said, I should know that right from the beginning. So if that's true, then why is she still taking this stuff? Now, I can appreciate the fact that she's got a heart problem. However, if I have an issue, if I have a medical issue, like I have an issue with my brain and I'm taking medication for it, I already know right from the beginning, okay, I can't take oxycodone for my brain issue. Because why? It's on the banned substance list.
Right.
So the Olympic Committee should know that. I have a brain issue and I need a medical exemption for this. Here's the paperwork. And I have people who handle that sort of stuff, right? So with that being said, this young lady, she knows that. They know that. So what are we doing here? Well, what we're doing here is we're circumventing the system. And how are we circumventing the system? We're circumventing the system with money.
And I don't blame her. She's 15.
Oh, absolutely not.
Right? She's 15. She probably doesn't even know. Yeah.
No, she doesn't. All she knows is, she's hearing, you skate. We'll take care of this.
Yeah, right.
We'll take care of this. This is about Olympic prominence. This is about people wanting other people to thrive for their benefit, and other people end up suffering for it. And it's too bad. That's absolutely too bad. No doubt.
I want to stay in Russia for a minute.
I don't. In February, I don't.
Yeah, probably. Well, good thing we're indoors, so it's not too bad. So I'm going to stay in Russia for a minute, and I'm going to ask you a question. Because it ties into this conspiracy, because this was sent to me again, and it ties into Russia. Russia, this is what I'll paraphrase the article. Russia is responsible for the trucker convoy protest. I'm sure you've seen in Ottawa and Toronto and Canada, the trucker convoy that has now started to sprout out in the U.S. as well against mask mandates and vaccine mandates. And it's Russia who's been sparking these convoys to distract Canada and the U.S., more so the U.S., so that Russia can attack the Ukraine. Do you believe that Russia's social media has that much influence that they can spark riots and protests?
I do.
And you do? Oh, you smiled. I thought you were going to laugh. No, you do.
Well, the reason why I do is because Russia and the United States have had this issue with each other since the Cold War, right? So this isn't something that's just going to go away. And now that technology has been advanced, they've recognized that there are ways for us to distract other people's attention for our benefit. And the way to do it, like you just said, convoy of trucks. Well, these trucks probably have goods in them. And we take these trucks with the goods in them and we distract people's attention and put them on that as opposed to, and put them on that. Meanwhile, we have a plan to deal with the Ukraine, which they've also been in war with Ukraine for decades.
Well, yeah. Well, ever since they left, right? But I thought, didn't Rocky Balboa go over there and smooth things over?
No, he didn't.
Didn't he say if eyes can change, yous can change, we alls can change?
In fact, he made it worse because he went over there and roughed up the Russian.
But they were cheering for him. He said, if yous can change, then eyes can change, we alls can change.
Well, obviously we can't can change.
We can't change?
Well, obviously we can't.
No. Well, Rocky, Sly, we need you to go back there and smooth it over. Maybe we should send Dennis Rodman over. He seemed to do pretty well with North Korea. speaking of Dennis Rodman, let's go right into the NBA. Do you like that? It's called a segue. So the NBA had, a surprisingly active trade deadline. Normally we talk a lot about the trade deadline and then we're always underwhelmed. It's actually pretty active. So give me some of your bests. Now I'm talking like yous and I's can trade. Give me some of your best and worst trades from the trade deadline.
Well, it's exactly what you just said, Tone. We have the trade deadline is normally much to do about nothing. So on the day of the trade deadline, it's usually this. We're just sitting around and we're hoping that something happens. Now, the days leading up to the trade deadline, you normally get some action. Every once in a while, you'll get a blockbuster deal. But for the most part, it's not that huge. But this trade deadline, I was really impressed, Tone. So I'm going to start with what Cleveland did. I'm not going to start with what Cleveland did. I'm going to start with what Portland did. Everybody talks about how the Trailblazers got fleeced. Okay, well, no, they didn't. And here's why they didn't. Okay, so we'll start with Norman Powell, who just signed a five-year extension. He's in the first year of that five-year extension. Well, let's get that off of our books. All right, we'll start there. We're going to get that off of our books. Then we're going to bring in Bledsoe, who's in the last year of his deal, which is great for us. All right, we'll bring expiring contracts or one-year contracts. Those things work perfectly for us because what that does is that opens up money. And then the Trailblazers bring in Keon Johnson. Well, Keon Johnson got a five-year deal. Yeah, it's only for $12 million. So he's on the books for $2 million here, $2.5 million there. So we can handle that.
Sorry, could you just for those people, could you just say only $12 million again?
I'm sorry.
Because I'll take a five-year $12 million today.
I'm sorry. So let me rephrase that. He's on the books for a little bit of money. So yeah. With all of that being said, the Trailblazers ended up saving $1 million on this deal. All right? They ended up saving $1 million on this deal. It's going to put them almost $60 million under the cap this summer. I think that they did that because come trade night, I think that they're trying to make some deals. All right?
Draft night?
Yeah, not trade night. I'm sorry, on draft night. I think that they're trying to make some deals. And if they don't, I think the logic to Dame is we're going into this summer and we're going shopping. And if we can't do anything for you, then we'll move you. I think that's the logic with the Trailblazers. And I think, to be honest with you, I think it's a good thing. And I know Dame, and I know how Dame is in terms of being loyal. I don't think he wants to leave Portland.
I agree with you. I don't think he wants to leave either.
I don't think he wants to leave Portland. I think he wants to stay there. So I don't mind this trade because, most importantly, we all know the Trailblazers aren't winning at home. We all know that. Right.
They're not winning. So, yeah, I agree.
So with that being said, we know for a fact that they're not necessarily starting over, but we know for a fact that they're moving in a different direction. I like what they did with this kid, Simons. I think that he's a building block for what they're doing. Add that to the fact that they move on from CJ. Now, moving on from CJ, that tells me that they're going in a different direction. I actually like CJ in New Orleans, to be honest with you, because they're right outside the play-in tournament. And I think that they're right there. Now, if we can get Zion healthy, that's a completely different team. Absolutely. But I like what they did. I like what the New Orleans Pelicans did with moving on CJ. Now, I'm going to move forward to.
Can I pause you there on Portland for a second? Because I agree with you. I think all those moves, and I came out and said it when the first one was done and everyone's like, that's crazy. I said, no, it's about money. That's all it's about. It's about cap space. Listen, if they could get some draft picks, they're going to do that too, but it's primarily for finance. Here's my problem with them doing it now, because you and I both agree when they were in the Western Conference Finals, that was their peak. That's when they needed to retool it, right? I'm surprised they didn't get rid of Jurkic, I think is the last name. Yeah, Nurkic, because he's also a free agent at the end of the season. So either they're just going to let his money come off the books. I think they could have got something for him. That being said, I'm looking right now at the list of free agents. I'm not excited. It's John Wall, Westbrook. These guys have player options. Beal, Irving, and then Gary Harris, Zach LaVine, Goran Dragic, Ricky Rubio, Andre Iguodala. There isn't, TJ Warren. I'm not seeing
nobody's really blowing your skirt up. I can
maybe Aiton is one. Like I said, I'm just going through this list. But other than that, and maybe I'm missing some, but I'm just going. I think it's in order of who's made the most money in the past. Mm-hmm. But I don't see anyone that's going to be like, oh yeah, if I team this player or these two players together with Dame. Now maybe the thought process is, hey, we're just going to put a better team around Dame than that fits better in CJ McCollum and Nurkic, because those three, if that's your big three, there's a reason Portland is where Portland is. Right. So I understand that, but I don't see anybody there that. And do you have faith that the Trailblazers can use that money wisely? Barring a trade, I get that. Like if Dame reaches out to, I don't know who, Rudy Gobert, and Rudy Gobert says, "Oh yeah, I'm done playing with Mitchell in Utah. I hate Utah. I want to come to Portland."
Which is okay. A ridiculous tone, just so you know. That's not ridiculous.
That's not ridiculous?
No, that is not ridiculous. I know it sounds
nuts. I said it because I thought it sounded nuts. No,
it's not ridiculous. Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are not, what's the word I'm looking for?
Best of friends?
They're not in synergy. Let's just say
not,
that.
No, no, they're not simpatico.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. Okay. So then maybe that's a good
idea. That's not ridiculous.
So unless Rudy Gobert says, "Hey, I want out to Utah. Here, you can get a sign and trade for Nurkic because he's a free agent and a draft pick. And now I go there, and those two say, okay, and we want X player to join us." Okay. Mm-hmm. That maybe that's doable. But when I look at the list of free agents, you know, a bunch of money means nothing if there's no one to spend it on.
Right. I can absolutely get with that logic.
Yeah. Sure. So I don't necessarily like the Portland trades. I understand why they did them.
Okay. I think, and I also think that come draft night, I think that they'll be very active.
Okay.
I think that they'll be very active. So now to move on to Cleveland, I think that what Cleveland did, I think that that was huge, Stone, to be honest with you, because that's a wing scorer in Caris LeVert that they didn't have. Right. You know how I felt about Okoro, bringing in Markin. I wasn't blown over by it, but I was like, okay, let's see how it works. But now you bring in Caris LeVert, who is another 17, 18 a game guy on the wing that can give you that pop that you didn't have. Add that to the fact that you got Garland as one of the best lead guards in the game. And you got your front court and you got your franchise player, I think, in Evan Mobley. I think that they're going to make some noise in the Eastern Conference. I'm really digging this trade. Absolutely.
For all the hate we've thrown Cleveland throughout the years, can't put a roster together, don't know how to make trades. I think they put together a really nice roster. And that was, you know, by some was considered a small trade, right? They flipped Ricky Rubio, who wasn't even playing,
right,
for Caris LeVert. Mm-hmm. That's probably the steal of the trade deadline, right? Because that's
one of them. Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of them, Tone. And the reason why is because, once again, teams love expiring contracts. Expiring contracts open up money.
Yeah.
When you open up money, that means that I have a better I have a better chance of getting a better free agent. So to not only get Ricky Rubio's money off the books, but for Indiana to go, okay, this is an expiring contract, we'll take it. He's not going to play anyway. Absolutely, we'll take this. We'll take this money off your books. So I like that one. I absolutely, this one of the steals of the draft, I think was Trez going to Charlotte. I think that was huge. Nobody's really talking about Montrezl Harrell going to Charlotte. I think that he's the dirty work guy that they've been looking for. I think that he's the rebounder that they've been looking for. I think that he's the toughness that they didn't have, or he's adding to that. And to get him for what they got him for, which is basically a bucket of extra crispy and a six pack.
But he was playing well. It was actually, I was surprised, but yeah, we've talked about these guys, those dirty work kind of guys that make a difference.
And I think that he's going to help Charlotte tremendously. I look at what he was doing. I still have not gotten a satisfactory answer, Tone, on why he was not in the rotation more in Los Angeles with the Lakers.
Oh, I told you. Vogel's a terrible coach.
You did tell me that Vogel was a terrible coach, now that I think about it. Yes, you did.
that's the only reason.
You told me that Vogel's a terrible coach.
He's not good. What? Look at his rotations today. Everyone wants to put the blame on what? Look, if you hate LeBron, you're blaming LeBron. You're saying he's too old. He's just stat padding. He's not playing defense, and that's why the Lakers lose. If you don't like Westbrook, you're saying, well, Westbrook's the new guy, so he's the problem because he's shooting himself them out of games and he's, you know, high turnovers, whatever. If you're a unicorns and rainbows, you're saying, well, AD was hurt and LeBron was hurt and it's so hard to get chemistry, it's their first year. No, dude, just watch the rotations. Watch if a team doesn't play defense. I'm sorry, when you're at the NBA level, the difference between a bad defender and a good defender. I'm not saying great defender. Great defender, you need some additional skills and ability. A bad defender to a good defender. Do you know there's only one thing that's different?
Effort.
Effort.
That's it.
Effort. And so if you're not giving effort, well, whose job is it to make sure you're giving effort? Well, that's the coach. Sorry. Everyone's going to say, yeah, they're grown men. No. That's why coaches get paid millions of dollars. It's to motivate and make sure they're giving effort. So you take and the Lakers are a bad defensive team. How do you make them a good defensive team? Effort. Who's responsible for that? Vogel. Who's doing it? No one. Look at their rotations. People will tell you a million times, I'm confused. They're getting beat on the boards, and they've got on, you know, DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard sitting on the bench. And the team that they're playing now is way more size than they do, and they're killing them on the boards. I don't know. Does it take a rocket scientist to say, well, put one of them in? Even though you're going to miss out on something offensively, well, you're getting kills on the boards, and that's why you're losing. I know I'm using a very simple example.
Sometimes it is that simple.
But sometimes it is that simple. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it is. So it's just – it's bad rotations, lack of motivation. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest. You and I talked about this yesterday. If you've got LeBron James on your team, mm-hmm. you need to have LeBron James on your side. And I don't know if he and Vogel are on the same page. And it's been true for, I feel like, who was his first coach? Was Paul Silas LeBron's first coach? Is memory serving me correctly? So I don't care if you're Paul Silas, Mike Brown, that other dude, I forget his name, the David Black. David Black, Tyronn Lue. I don't care who you are. Luke Walton. I don't care who you are. If you have LeBron on your team, sorry, that needs to be your number one priority. You guys need to be on the same page. Yeah. Because then when you say something and he goes yes or reiterates what you're saying, yeah. now you have the other 14 players that are dressed. I think they dress 15. Now they all buy in too. Because if I say, guys, we need to do A, B, C, and LeBron says, ABC, yeah, 100%, let's do it. Now everyone's doing ABC. But if I say ABC and he goes, I'd rather do XYZ, you're done. You're done.
Well, to get an endorsement from LeBron is huge. It's like getting an endorsement from Jordan or like getting an endorsement from Magic or just one of the better players in the game. And the last thing that you want is to be at odds with your star player. I don't care where you are. I don't know whether it's in football, basketball, but if you're at odds with your star player, that's definitely a problem. So when I look at Trez and I look at what he was doing on that unit and how much better he could have made them. Because I watched games where he wasn't playing in the entire second half. And I'm thinking to myself, why is this guy not playing? I mean, this was the sixth man of the year the year before. He was the best bench player in the game. And why is he not playing more? What's the problem? Well, it sounds like the problem to me is it's a rotation issue. Because I watched them, and I watched the Lakers this year, and I watched the Lakers last year. They got 12 new guys this season. As opposed to last year. Only three guys on the crew from this year that was on the crew from last year. That's AD, THT, and James. That's it. Everybody else is new. So you're going to have some rotation issues. I understand that. However, they can't be, because again, Tom, we're only talking about Vogel. There's other coaches there who have input that can tell me, yo, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? Right. So with that being said, I look at this unit and I'm thinking, we have to get a better rotation. And this guy, Trez, should definitely have been in the lineup more. And I think he's going to help Charlotte tremendously. With that young group that they have, absolutely. I think he's going to help them more. Now, when I think about, since we're on the subject of Trez and Washington, Porzingis coming to Washington, I don't know how that's going to help them with Bradley Beal. Even though I think, because I think about health with Porzingis more than anything. I look at what he did in Dallas. I mean, we're talking about they played 43 games this season, Tone. He missed 22 of them. That's half. I can't really build the chemistry with a guy who's in the lineup every other game. That's not going to work.
I don't see him and Beal working out. And I think that is a powder keg. That's going to explode.
Well, when I see those two, the thing with me is helped more than anything. And Beal isn't a playmaker. Right? Beal isn't a playmaker.
Beal's a scorer.
Porzingis also isn't a playmaker. Porzingis is a guy who scores the basketball, right? So then you add in Hachimura. Then you add in Bryant, right? As another dirty work guy. So
no, didn't Bryant went to Dallas, right?
Bryant also went to Dallas. I take that back. Him with Dinwiddie, they went to Dallas. Yeah. So you add in Porzingis and you add in Hachimura.
Yeah.
So we don't really have.
Who's a playmaker?
Right. Because I think Ish is gone too. I think they moved on from Ish. And with that being said, I look at what Washington is doing and I'm trying to make sense of it, Tone. I really am. But I'm also trying to make sense of what Dinwiddie is doing in Dallas. Because we already got Hardaway. We already got Finney Smith. So you want to bring in Dinwiddie, who plays the lead guard. Well, we got a pretty good lead guard. I don't know if you heard of him. He's from Europe.
Well, listen, they had to get rid of Dinwiddie because of what you were hearing about what was going on in the locker room.
Wasn't working.
They had to move on from him. So I understand why Washington traded him. Mm-hmm. I am confused how they're going to make that work in Dallas. But Dallas is another team. Dallas, Washington, you know, more so even than Indiana, Portland, where I scratch my head and I'm like, what are you doing? I don't understand this roster that you're trying to create. Right. Maybe there's a longer term vision. Mm-hmm. But right now it just looks, it looks a little Frankensteinish, right? Like they're taking pieces off and putting them together. And I don't know that it looks very good.
And I feel the same way about Washington today as I did before the season started. And in October, when I told you, Tone, that I think Washington was at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, they ran outside the play-in tournament at 12. And I don't think that they're a playoff team. Excuse me. I do not think that they're a playoff team. And I always felt like they weren't a playoff team. I think that that organization, how they were running things early, it looked good early, but ultimately it is not something that it's not something that's sustainable. So I did scratch my head with that. Tone, a lot of people scoffed at what Sacramento did. I actually like Fox and Sabonis together. And the reason why I like Fox and Sabonis together, Fox is 24 years old. Sabonis is 25 years old. So I have a young nucleus. I got young guys that I can build around. I'm a huge fan of this kid, Holmes, in Sacramento. He's cut from the Christian Wood, dirty work kind of guy, who is a rim protector, who's a defender, who can really rebound the basketball and help you. And I like him with these two guys. Fox reminds me, he looks like a more athletic version of Nick Van Exel. Sabonis, I won't say he's as good as his dad, but he's definitely one of the better bigs in the league. And as a young guy, we could build around these guys.
He's as versatile as his dad.
Yes, he is.
Right, absolutely. He can do a bunch of things, yeah.
And we can build around these guys. Now, with that being said, Tone, everybody was turning their nose up to Halliburton. Well, turning their nose up the fact that they moved on from Halliburton. Well, the question that I need answered is, what exactly is Halliburton? I know that this is his second year in the league. Is Halliburton, is he a, because I think they got a one for him. I think that they got a one for him. I understand what Indiana did. Is Halliburton, is he an all-star at some point? Is he an all-league performer? Because when I think about moving on from a guy, right, what's the ceiling for this guy, especially when we're looking at him in year two? What is this? What do we see as a ceiling? Is he better than Victor Oladipo? Can he be better than Victor Oladipo was? We'll see about that.
Is he better than De'Aaron Fox? Potentially.
I don't think so.
Mm-mm. See, because I think that was the biggest thing is people saw Halliburton in the way that they were playing, I guess, in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And the thought process was, well, Halliburton's going to be better than Fox. Now, I think we had higher expectations for Fox, which is part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Expectations will kill you. But they thought Halliburton can be better, maybe because he's younger. And so, why would you do that? But for me, I'm looking at it from a GM perspective, and I'm back to what I said about these other teams. Well, I'm trying to put a team together. So who's a better match? Now, you don't know. The trade could have at first been Fox and pieces for Sabonis and pieces. And they said, no, we don't want Fox. We want Halliburton. So they made that change.
That could work. That could be it.
That might have been it. The other side of it is, who's a better matchup? Because we want a guard big matchup. In the NBA, people seem to forget that is still a really good recipe for success. Very few teams win with two great guards and no big. Very few teams win with just two really great bigs. It's typically, and when I say bigs, I mean, it could be a forward or a center, right? Mm-hmm. And a guard. It's literally, you need a really good or great guard and a really good or great, just look at the Bucks who won last year, right? They bring in Middleton. I'm not knocking Middleton, but they bring in a much better defensive guard in Holiday, pair him up with Giannis, small, big buckets. I get it. Okay. LeBron and AD might be the exception, right? There are exceptions to the rule, but typically, right, it's that. It's you have a big, you have a guard. So they looked at it and said, okay, who's a better matchup? Is Halliburton and Sabonis work well together? Or do we think Fox and Sabonis work well together? Well, in their eyes, no, we like this matchup. We think these two guys can really grow together and become a good tandem. Mm-hmm. So they made the choice based on what, and you always tell this, we're not at practice. We don't see what happens every day. Like, we don't know all that stuff. You see on the court, that's important too. But there's more to it.
Add that to the fact, Tone, that we're talking about an Indiana team who They're having a fire sale. All right. So when I'm having a fire sale, come on in. All right. And you, I can basically get, if I can get something for 20 cents on the dollar, if I can get something for 10 cents on the dollar, something that's really good. I got these skis here, Tom. These skis are $400 skis. Make me an offer. I'll give them to you for 50 bucks. 50? Make it 60 and we got a deal. Deal. Yeah. Absolutely. So when I thought that they were going to move off of Turner, I was surprised that they didn't. I don't think that they got the deal that they wanted. I do think that they're going to move off of him on draft night, though.
I disagree. I think they realized what they have in Turner. Mm-hmm. And his biggest thing wasn't that he wanted out of Indiana because he doesn't like it. Was because he felt underappreciated. Mm-hmm. Because he was also living a little bit in Sabonis' shadow, mm-hmm. who's kind of an all-around, maybe a little bit better, at least statistically, production minutes. He was getting the minutes, right? Sabonis was kind of the guy, I think, a little bit in India. Mm-hmm. So I think management went to Turner and said, hey, we want you to be our big, and here's what we're going to do. We believe in you so much, we're going to move Sabonis.
An all-star, though. Wow, to pick him, Tone? To pick an all-star? Listen,
again, I don't know why. Wow. I don't know why, but I think because now you've heard reports where Turner said, no, I'm committed to Indiana now. Mm-hmm. So I think there was that conversation that I don't work with Sabonis. We're too, you know, we both kind of play the same position, whatever.
Right.
And it's like, hey, we believe in you. We're gonna mm-hmm. roll with you. So I think they might actually stick with him. And maybe in their eyes, they're thinking that Halliburton Turner
right.
is a good inside-outside kind of pairing.
Right.
So we'll see. The Pacers haven't been right. Sacramento hasn't been right in a lot of years.
Right.
So we'll see.
I was really surprised about that, Tone, because I'm looking at a guy in Turner who is one of the better defenders in the game, one of the better long ball big shooters in the game. And not to mention, Sabonis is an all-star, right? Mm-hmm. Sabonis is a 20-10 guy. So I don't think you go wrong in terms of picking which one. If I go, I'm going to go with Turner instead of Sabonis, because it's not like Sabonis is that much better than Turner. And it's not like Turner is that far away from Sabonis neither. So with that being said, I was surprised that they held on to Turner, because it looked to me like it was a fire sale. And it looked to me like it was something that they were just moving on from with everybody. So come get whatever it is that you want. I'm selling that. Just make me an offer and I'm selling. Now, with that being said, there were some teams who were pretty cautious. So, for example, the Celtics, you know, moving off of Josh Richardson and bringing in Derek White. I actually like that move, Tone, because I think Derek White, he's a little younger than Josh Richardson. He's a better offensive player. And I think that he can make up for what they do defensively, because he's not great defensively, but I think that Boston has a really good defensive team, especially as of late. I mean, they've won 8 straight. And I think that that's primarily due to their defense. So you bring in a guy in Derek White who's 14 a game, and he gives you that extra punch off the bench. I think he's going to help them out tremendously. Now, I was surprised that they didn't move off of Marcus Smart to get themselves a lead guard. I thought Fox would have been great for what they were doing. But obviously, whatever they're doing right now, it's working, because, again, they've won 8 straight. But I tell you what wasn't working. What wasn't working, what was going on in Cleveland, what was going on in Brooklyn. That was not working. Okay, we're talking about a team that before yesterday, they had lost 11 straight. And Tone, you know this just as well as I do. When a team puts a superstar on a trade block in a contract year, what does that mean? It means that they're going to lose him. So they don't want him to walk out. Right. They don't want him to walk out the door for anything. They don't want him to walk out the door for nothing. So they put James Harden on a trade block. And then they rescind it. Well, wait a minute. We're not really thinking about trading them. Actually, you are. And the reason why you're saying that is because you want the price to go up. That's why you're saying that, which I can appreciate that. Absolutely. So they move off of James Harden, who wants to be in Philadelphia, because this thing in Brooklyn, Tone, the way it's constructed, I just didn't see it working. That's why I said that they were fool's gold. I just did not see it working. I know who James Harden is. How you feel about Matt Stafford? That's how I feel about James Harden. That's exactly how I'm. Great player, but I know who you are, and you are going to reintroduce yourself to me soon enough. I know that about you. Now, him moving from Brooklyn to Philadelphia, I think he is going to help them, because especially in the short term, Joel Embiid has never had a playmaker, distributor, and a long ball shooter, and a scorer like this. James Harden never had a big like this that can pick and pop, can pick and dive, can take the ball off the backboard and handle it and take it out of his hands and can shoot the long ball. And they were able to keep Maxey and Thybulle, so they were able to stay good defensively, right? So I think that this helps them. Now, in terms of Brooklyn, I'm concerned with Ben Simmons being still out of the lineup. He's a ways away. So he hasn't played since they were out of the playoffs in May. We're talking 8 months, Tone. What's the hold up? What's the problem? He's not injured. He's not hurt. So what's the problem? Not to mention, with that being said, I don't know if you remember this, Tone, but I had asked, the Brooklyn Nets had lost to Miami early in the season. In fact, they got pummeled. And I said, instead of Irvin for Ben Simmons, how about you call up Brooklyn? Take Irv off the table. How about you call up Brooklyn? How about you call up Philadelphia and you ask for Andre Drummond? I got roasted for that. And the reason why I got roasted for that. Did you see Andre Drummond in Los Angeles with AD? Well, when I'm playing alongside another big who does what I do, well, that should enhance my game. Well, actually, it didn't. It wasn't a good fit. Does that mean that Andre Drummond is trash as a defender? I don't think so. I think that he's an elite rebounder, and I think that he was a better dirty work guy than they gave him credit for. So I think he's going to help them out tremendously. Now you get a long ball shooter in Seth Curry when you already got one with Patty Mills, and I think he takes Joe Harris's spot. Now the question is what's going to happen when KD gets healthy? What's going to be the story with Irv being in and out of the lineup? Are they going to lift the mask mandate? Are they going to lift the vaccine mandate? Are they going to do these things?
It looks like they're starting to do that, by the way. Like, mm-hmm. I think by March, kind of first 15th, they might actually lift it, and he might be able to come in full time. But I want to pause there for a second because let me just go back to Harden and Philly. That two-man game with Harden mm-hmm. and Embiid is going to be scary. I understand. Mm-hmm. I really do understand why Harden wanted out, though.
Why?
Well, one, he goes in there thinking it's going to be, you know, him, Kyrie, and KD, and they're going to roll to a chip.
That's what I signed up for, Tom.
He signed up for an easy ring because don't forget, KD has rings. Kyrie has a ring.
Yes, I do.
Harden does not.
No, he does not.
He understands. Listen, players today understand you need a ring for your legacy. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to team up. I'm going to work my way out of Phoenix. Out of Houston. I'm going to wear that fat suit and I'm going to get out of Houston, right? I'm going to get out of Houston so that I can go with KD and Kyrie to Brooklyn. There's not really when you think of that team, this was before the Bucks kind of ascension and mm-hmm. the holiday trip. There's no team in the East that I'm scared of. No. There's no team in the East. So that's going to be an easy road for us to get to a final and maybe win a ring or two. Well, now all of a sudden, everybody gets hurt. They get bounced out of the playoffs from the Bucks. The Bucks go on and win a ring. Apparently, in practice, him and Kyrie are going at it, and Kyrie's shutting him down. Mm-hmm. Shutting him down. So, and then, he's not getting a vaccine. He's not playing. He's playing part-time. Now KD is hurt. Mm-hmm. We still don't have a man in the middle. You've been saying since day one, that's going to be a problem for them. Well, this situation is an easy road. Where is an easier road for me to get to the final? Well, the Bucks aren't going to make a trade for me. That's not happening. Chicago's not making a trade for me. That's not happening. Oh, Philadelphia. They've got a max contract player who's not even playing. Their second best player who's not even playing.
Who's disgruntled, by the way.
Who is never going to play for Philadelphia again. Who happens to have my old GM, my good friend, Daryl Morey. Hey, Daryl, I think I can help you guys win a chip. He's like, hey, I got defensive players because I don't really play defense. Let's be honest. Like you said, in Maxey and Thybulle, I got an MVP caliber, if not the MVP at center. Probably should have been last year if he didn't miss so many games. Mm-hmm. Looking like he's going to be the MVP this year. What do they need? They need a lead guard. Oh, I get to hold the ball. I get to dribble the ball up the court. I get to be the ball dominant guard on this team. That looks like a real great situation for me. And it puts me in a better situation because, again, if I'm on Philadelphia, well, am I scared of the Nets? No, I know what they're like internally. They're trash. Am I scared of the Bulls as well as they're playing? Well, no, it's their first year together. Who knows? Am I scared of the Bucks? Okay, I think I am. But I think Embiid matches up well with Giannis. Because I have an ego, I'm James Harden. I match up really well with Middleton or Holiday. I'll go nuts on that. And then our other pieces. Yeah, I'm only worried about the Bucks, but I think we can take them. Mm-hmm. Here's my best opportunity to get a ring. Mm-hmm. So I understand what James Harden did, because if that's all that's on your mind, you're going. I do question, and you brought these guys up, did Philadelphia, I hate to say this, did they maybe give up too much? Because to your point, when I look at the Nets now, and now I see now Kyrie, again, hopefully, let's say full-time, let's say the mandates lift. He's now again the ball dominant guard, which is what he wants. He can now penetrate and kick it out to Patty Mills and Seth Curry, who are going to knock down those threes, and they're not going to ask to hold the ball. They're not going to ask to dribble. They're not ball dominant. They're very happy spotting up, getting a nice easy pass and shooting. That was my role. I love that role. I loved when there was a ball dominant guard on my team and I could just hang out in the corner and whoop, pop away at three. Loved it. Mm-hmm. So he's got that. KD's going to come back healthy. And guess what is going to happen for KD? Well, he's going to have all that space to work with because he's got guys like Patty Mills and Seth Curry to hit those threes and open up what he wants to do, which can be outside. It could be mid-range. He can post up. Man, I wish we had someone to kind of get that, you know, get those boards, do that dirty work, play inside. Oh, we got one. We got Andre. We got Drummond.
Glad so you now mentioned it.
We got every piece that we need now. Uh-huh. I think this is actually the one time where I would say, if I forget emotion and I just look at it, both teams got better. Mm-hmm. Because we're forgetting Ben Simmons wasn't playing.
No, he was not.
So basically you put Harden into a lineup and removed Drummond, who, hey, listen, I like the insurance, but really is redundant with Embiid. Mm-hmm. And Seth Curry, who, well, I'm better than Seth Curry. So really you traded James Harden for, in terms of playing minutes. Seth, would you do this trade? Seth Curry and Andre Drummond for James Harden?
I would do that.
Of course you would. And that's in essence what they did to their lineup. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
I would absolutely.
Perfect. It works for both teams. So. Yes,
absolutely do that. Now, when I think about Brooklyn, and when I think about, I think it was in the short term. That's why they did it more than anything. It was absolutely in the short term. And with their ability to win it right now, because what I don't want to do, Tone, is I am not interested in wasting any more of Joel Embiid's prime seasons. How many more seasons James Harden got left at this level? I'm going to say two, maybe three tops.
Yeah, three tops.
And I think that Embiid has 5 years at this level before he starts to break down. So what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to waste any of his years. And the last thing that I want to do as a GM is let James Harden as a superstar. I believe that's in, I think that if you open up the rule book in the NBA, I think it's like rule number six. Do not let your free agents walk out the door.
Well, James Harden already took his player option, correct? So yes, he's there. Did. So he's there for another year too.
That was part of the deal.
That, yeah.
LeBron James, he wrote the blueprint on that, Tone. When my free agent comes up, when my star player comes up on a contract year, if he doesn't sign an extension, deal him because he's going to leave you high and dry. That's a fireable offense, Tone. I think it cost Danny Ainge his job. You don't let Kyrie Irving walk out the front door. No way. I don't care.
Let me tell you something. It cost Vince Carter his career because the Raptors allowed Tracy McGrady to walk to Orlando for nothing.
Man.
And it cost the Raptors 5 years, which was basically Vince Carter's career. Had they re-signed him or said, because people were, they could have, look, I don't like this trade, but there was a trade on the table, T-Mac for Pippen.
That was a deal.
I'd make that deal and bring in that veteran in Pippen to play along Vince Carter.
Remember, Tone,
that
wasn't a rumor. It was a deal. We have a deal, and the Bulls rescinded on it. Like, no, we're not doing that. But you do not let your star free agents just walk out the front door because that could cripple your franchise. Absolutely. And I actually dig what Brooklyn did. So there's your trades, man. That's what I'm feeling.
All right. So that was the trade deadline. That was on, I don't know, was it Thursday or Friday Thursday. Last week?
Thursday, 3 p.m.
When we move forward to the weekend, there's a game of football.
Yeah, it was.
It's a really good game of football. Before we get to the game, I quickly want to ask you a question. The halftime show. We talked about our MVPs. You had Mary J. I had Kendrick Lamar. Who do you think was actually the MVP of that halftime show?
I think it was Mary. I thought Mary killed it.
I think Mary killed it.
I thought Mary killed it.
And the amount of comments I saw, I didn't know Monet could sing. just killed me through that. Killed me.
Yes. Monet can sing too.
Monet can sing.
Yes,
Monet,
she can.
Monet was singing first. I will say this. I will say this. I think the music was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think the show was as big as like when I look at what like Prince did. Heck, U2, right after 9/11, did this whole like just, you know, the tribute to the 9/11. They sang MLK. Like, it was a big show.
Well, wait a minute, Tone.
I think the show was bigger. My problem with the halftime show was a friend of mine was sending mm-hmm. me pictures. I wanted to wring his neck. Was sending me pictures from his incredible seats. But he was on the other side where all he saw was the back of those trailers. And so that's why I'm like, you know, you like literally shut off right. half of the fact. So that's why I was like, they didn't do a great job of stage presence.
Well, with that being said, I mean, you think about Prince in 2007. I mean, how can you orchestrate it raining while he's singing Purple Rain? I mean, what the hell?
He rest in peace. He is Prince, right?
Right.
He probably just asked.
Right. Yeah, orchestrate that. That's a big deal. You know what I mean? So I thought that the show was it was up there.
Look, it's top three for sure. That's top five.
It might have been the best show that I've seen. When I think about Prince, when I think about Beyonce, when I think about Michael Jackson, yeah. It's right there. It's in that conversation with the best show that I've seen. No question about it.
Yeah, I have it up there. Like I said, I have Beyonce up there. I have U2 up there. I have Prince. Prince is still my number one. Michael mm-hmm. Jackson is up there for me. I said to you before, Lady Gaga, in terms of a stage show, mm-hmm. right? It's up there. It's in the top five. Musically, I'm telling you, musically, it was one. It's just, maybe it's one, two. I don't know. I really like Prince. I'll say it's one. And then, mm-hmm. when you add in the stage stuff, like the actual show, it drops a little bit for Prince for me, but it was so good. I'm going to put this out there. I know people are going to make fun of me, but I'm going to say this. If 50 Cent was a woman, you would never make fun of him for his weight gain. Stop making fun of 50 Cent. There were some good ones. Don't get me wrong. I can laugh like what they say. I think, you know, Dick Butkus, mm-hmm. right? Former Bear legend said, looked like 50 Cent got hit by inflation. Right? There were some good ones. But then I'm like, no, we gotta be consistent. Leave 50 Cent alone. Mm-hmm. All right. That being said, let's get to the game. I want you to give me one good thing, one negative thing or thing they need to improve on for each team. I want to start with losing team, with the Bengals. So what was one thing you saw in the Super Bowl that they did really well? What was something that, hey, if they would have done this better, they could have won?
Well, I actually thought that they did a better job than I thought they would at protecting Joe Burrow. I thought that he was going to get blitzed a lot more. I thought that he was going to get sacked a lot more. And I thought that they did a better job at protecting him. I thought they did a really good job at moving the football too.
And
what they did not do? What didn't they do well?
Yeah, or something they could if they would have done better or improved on, well, right? They could have won that game.
And it's a tall task, Tone. I thought they had a really difficult time with Cooper Kupp. I thought they could have done a better job in that secondary with Cooper Kupp, but that's like saying, you know, we could have done a better job of slowing Jordan down. So, you know,
if you would have just stopped James in the finals, you would have won that. Yeah.
We could have done a better job at slowing down James, man. You know, him go. So that goes without saying. I think they got what they wanted from Matt Stafford. He gave mm-hmm. them what they were looking for. I don't think that they capitalized as much. So, for example, when Matt Stafford threw that pick, which I thought he was going to do, and he got them in the red zone. When you get in the red zone, Tone, you got to score. You have to score. 3 points isn't enough, especially in the bowl game. Three points is not enough. And I don't think that they capitalized on Matt Stafford's turnovers and his ability to give them the ball, like we talked about. I don't think that they capitalized on that as much. And I think that that was a huge part in why they didn't win the game.
So what I think they did well is actually what I think they did poorly. Mm-hmm. And let me explain. Because they still gave up 7 sacks for the game.
Yeah.
But they gave up very few early. And what they did early was they went 4 wide, 5 wide, and it was quick passes. And they, listen, when you're getting the ball out of your hands that fast, it makes it really hard for those rushers to get up and sack you. That's how you beat it. A good running game and quick passing. So I think they did that very well. What I think the opportunity was that in the second half, they didn't do that. I saw Joe Burrow holding the ball and getting sacked. And they went away from, although he wasn't having a big game, they went away from Joe Mixon. Like he ended up with 15 carries, but I think a lot of those were in the first half. Well, if memory serves me correctly, who was the catalyst for that drive that took the Chiefs, that ran on the Chiefs and got them into that field goal?
Joe Mixon.
To win the game? It was Joe Mixon. So I don't know if he was hurt. I don't know if he pissed off somebody. But the fact that I saw a P. Ryan or Pyro, I forget, I always say his name wrong, running the ball on that 3rd and 1, where's Joe Mixon? Now I get it. You're putting him in there because it might be, I get it. They might have audible. They wanted to throw the defense off and say, hey, you know, we might be throwing here. I'm sorry. I think you outsmart yourself sometimes when you do that. You're 3rd and 1. You know it's four down situation. You hammer it with Joe Mixon, who has been good in those situations in the playoffs. So I think that's something that probably maybe even cost them the game. Because I don't think you can stop Joe Mixon. I don't think they could have stopped what Cooper Kupp did. Like, there was a lull there after OBJ got hurt, where it looked like the offense was a little out of sync. But then they figured it out, right? The Rams, and they were. Listen, you know that no look.
How many quarterbacks? I can't say with 100% certainty that I can name 5 quarterbacks that could throw that pass.
There's maybe 4-5 in the NFL that can do that that well. So, right. I've always said this about Matthew Stafford. My issue with Stafford isn't his ceiling, because his ceiling is tremendous. It's his floor.
Yeah.
So that being said, let's move to the Rams. What did they do great that won them the Super Bowl?
Matt Stafford. That's what they did great. Matt Stafford. Even with losing OBJ, Matt Stafford looked like he had command of that offense. I already knew what he was going to do in terms of turning the football over. I knew that, but I thought that his command of the offense was extraordinary. His ability to get the ball to Cooper Kupp when it was necessary. I thought that they did a good job in dealing with the run game and dealing with the outside game. So when I see what Matt Stafford was doing with Cooper Kupp and keeping eyes on him, Tone, you and I have had this conversation more than once, more than twice. The great quarterbacks, when they come to the line of scrimmage, who is their guy? And every time Matt Stafford came to the line of scrimmage, where's Kupp? There he is. And he made that clear. And he very much had command of that offense. And I think that they were able to move the football early. I think that they were able to move the football a lot better than I thought. I thought they did a good job of that, even late too. So the downside to that is, and also, I know you only gave me one thing. I know you only gave me one thing. But the other thing was, I thought that defense, I thought that Aaron Donald and I thought that Von Miller, I thought that they created havoc. Even though Cincinnati, I thought they did a good job up front as well as they could do. I just thought that they did a good job of disrupting things. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, the bad thing, Matt Stafford not taking care of football. That was the thing that I didn't appreciate, which I knew he was going to do that anyway. I just thought that Cincinnati was going to do a better job in taking advantage of that, and he did.
I think people want to make Matthew Stafford. Let's start with him, because listen, I've talked very poorly about Matthew Stafford for
rightfully so
for a decade, and the other side always says to me, well, that's because he was on Detroit. And what I tell them is Matthew Stafford's still the same quarterback.
He's still
the same quarterback. Mm-hmm. The difference is in Detroit, he didn't have collectively, he didn't never had as much talent around him as he does in LA. Now people are going to say, well, Megatron. Yeah, but who else? Whereas here they've had Kupp. They had Robert Woods to start the season. Then OBJ. OBJ, by the way, if he doesn't get hurt, that's your MVP, by the way. He was having a game. He was going to go 10 for 150 and 3 scores. He was going to have a game.
Forget
right?
It.
As well as the 92-2 from Cooper Kupp, well-deserving of the MVP. That I think this was going to be OBJ's kind of signature Super Bowl game, where we look back at his career when he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame and they talk about that Super Bowl. So I feel bad that he didn't get to do that. That being said, so he never had as much offensive talent around him in Detroit. He never had a defense. Like, forget about the numbers for a second, because everyone wants to talk talent. Is there a more talented defense? You got two guys up front in Miller and Donald, who's one of the greatest defensive players ever. He's in that conversation. Then don't forget, we are all forgetting about Leonard Floyd, who is with the Bears are dumb for letting him ever go. And then you got Jalen Ramsey, who, yeah, he'll get burnt, but for the most part, he's going to do what he needs to do. Right. Even on that touchdown that he gave up, it was a clear, it was a face mask. I get it. Hey, bad call, whatever. But it was a face mask. So you got the back end, you got the middle, and you got the front end. You got every aspect of the defense covered by superstars. So he's never had that kind of defense. So, so the wins and the losses, and oh, you never won in Detroit. You never won. Oh, now all of a sudden he's a great quarterback. No, he's the same quarterback who's going to throw you incredible no look passes and then throw you an interception in the end zone. Right. He, so that he's the same guy. He just has people to cover up for him. Now he has a safety blanket in Cooper Kupp that he could always throw to. He has a deep threat in OBJ that just seems to always be open. He has an offensive minded head coach who made the game easy. But if you look at his stat line, if you look at what he does, great throw, bad throw, great throw, good throw, bad throw. That's who he is. He's still the same quarterback. Give him all the flowers that you want. He's still the same quarterback. He's just on a better team. And to say, well, now he's on a better team, he won a Super Bowl. Sure. Okay. Yeah. I'll give him the credit for that, but he's not a different quarterback. He's the same quarterback on a better team.
Yes or no, Tone? No, no. I don't think that we need,
Don't ask it.
Yes or no. Take Matt Stafford off that unit with the same unit. Put Jared Goff on it or they win the Super Bowl.
Oh, no, no. I think he's better than Jared Goff.
I do think so.
I think he's better. I thought you, if you would have said a different name, I might add a different. No, Jared Goff. Look, he's better than Jared Goff. Listen, he's a top 10 quarterback in the league. I'm not taking it. I know it always, you know, when I point out real, people want to call me a hater and say, you know, I hate. No, it's just that he's the same guy. He's on a better team. He's still a really good quarterback, but he's going to give, just think about it. And I'm not making excuses because the Bengals are young, but if he throws those two picks to another team, if it's Kansas City in the Super Bowl, okay, and he throws those two picks, you know Mahomes is going to take them down the field and score. And now you lose that game and we're having Buffalo. The conversation. Buffalo. We're having... Yeah. Again, I'm not making excuses, but I'm saying he throws those two picks. Those two guys use those two picks and they go down and they score touchdowns. And now they lose the game. The conversation we're having today is Matthew Stafford.
That's what it is.
Same Matthew Stafford. He was just fortunate that Joe Cool didn't, you know, as cool as Joe Burr is, he did seem. Now, a lot of that is the defense. Like we said, it wasn't just sacks. You got him kind of rattled a little bit. And he, you know, there's some overthrows, those types, you know. Hey, it's what you expect. The Rams overall get all the credit in the world. They played an amazing game, the right game plan. You know, how fitting that it's Aaron Donald wrapping his arms around Joe Burrow as he's trying to throw it away. That, you know, unfortunately, the same thing that he did to Garoppolo to get the win. And let me say this. I love Aaron Donald. So as much as I'm not a fan of Matthew Stafford, I am so happy for him to get his ring because I think he definitely deserved it. All right. Mm-hmm. You know what it's time for now?
Mail drop.
All right, here we go. Three questions. We're starting in the NBA. I think we already touched on this one, so it might be an easier answer. Can the Lakers make noise in the playoffs?
Noise? Yeah. I think make a lot of noise. I don't know. There's some matchups that I really don't like, Tone. I don't like that Memphis matchup. I don't think that they could beat Phoenix. I don't think that they could beat Golden State in round one. So in order for them to make some real noise, they're going to have to get a higher seed.
So right now they're sitting at 9. Yep. They would have to play the Clippers. Who would have ever thought at the beginning of this season the Lakers would have to play the Clippers for the play-in game? So let's assume they get in at number 8.
Yeah.
You'd have to play Phoenix in round one.
So you're talking about a Phoenix team that I think is the most complete team in the game right now. And I don't think that the Lakers can match them. Now, I understand that with James, I have a difficult time betting against you, right? But with that being said, I look at this Phoenix team, and I just think that they're more complete. I think that they're better overall. Chris Paul is in the MVP conversation for me because he's the catalyst. He's the engine that makes that team go, and I think that the Lakers would have a very difficult time with them.
I can't believe I'm going to say this as you see my championship Laker ball sitting behind me and all my Laker paraphernalia. No, I don't think they can make any noise because they didn't do anything at the trade deadline. They didn't fire their coach. They've done nothing that will make that team better. They got AD back, and I thought, okay, that's going to be the difference. It's not. James is actually looking pedestrian the last couple of – his age is starting to show a little bit. He'll turn it around. He'll be fine. But that being said, where they are today, right, they are 59 games in. Call it 60. So they have 22 games left. Can they make it to the four seed in 24 games? No, because they're 10 games back of the four seed, which means even if they finish 8, 7, or 6, they'll have to play Phoenix, Golden State, Memphis. There's no good matchup for them.
I don't like it.
And I just, they're out in the first round. Listen, for all the Jordan is the GOAT people and who use this, I don't use this, even though I have Jordan as the GOAT. They're going to have a whole lot more ammunition to say, well, look at that. Now James has been knocked out of the first round twice. James hasn't made the playoffs three times. Well, Jordan only didn't make the playoffs twice and got knocked out of the first round three times. Look at this, right? It's nonsense. I agree. I even roll my eyes at that one. But yeah, it's they're out in the first round. They're done. And I hate to say it, but maybe it's a good thing. Maybe they realize you can't make, like you said before, like 10 new players.
12. They got 12 new guys on the roster.
12 new guys on the roster, man. Like, 12. Oh my goodness. And not only 12 new guys, but not guys that fit together.
Right.
Again, it's just, yeah, it's so they're done. All right. Next one. Is DeMar DeRozan in your top three for MVP this season?
He's not in my top three, but he's in my top. And the reason why he's not in my top three, he's in my top five, absolutely. And the reason why he's not in my top three is because he just so happens to have a guy on his unit that's doing the same thing that he's doing. So DeMar's averaging 26, 27 a game. Zach LaVine's averaging 26 a game. So that doesn't help him at all. However, we look at this Bulls team, and they were decimated by injuries. Meanwhile, he kept them at the top of the East, which has been a nightmare this year, right? And averaging what he's been averaging and doing the things that he was doing with Zach LaVine out of the lineup, I think that he absolutely is a top five MVP candidate. Now, in terms of a top three candidate, Chris Paul, Joker, Giannis, those are my guys. Chris Paul, Giannis, and Joel Embiid, those are my guys because Joker is out. I mean, the Denver Nuggets are seventh in the West. So your 26 is not more valuable than the guy who's the third seed or the second seed, his 22. Your 26 is not more valuable. It's not. So, but DeMar DeRozan is absolutely a top five MVP candidate. And he's been that for me all season.
So I'll give you the exact. I tend to round up. Like I would say DeMar is 28, 5-5. And I would say LaVine is 25, 5-5. Mm-hmm. But I'll give you the exact numbers because people will nitpick. So DeRozan's 27.9.
28.
5.2 rebounds and 5.1 assists.
Okay. Five.
So 28, okay. 5-5.
Yep.
Your point, LaVine, 24.6.
Mm-hmm. 25.
4.9 rebounds.
5.
And 4.5 assists.
5.
Okay, so 28, 5-5 versus 25, 5-5.
Right.
That's actually really impressive, but you're right. It does hurt, I think, your MVP stock because if you're switching 1 3-pointer, right? It's if LaVine is taking that bucket instead of DeRozan. Now LaVine's the guy that's 28, 5-5, and are we having LaVine in our MVP conversation?
Right.
You know. So yeah, I see your point. So I think you're. Here's what I think. I don't have DeRozan in my top five for MVP, but I have him in the you need to bring up his name, which is just as impressive, right? Because I don't think he has a chance of winning. And who I would put in my top five would have a chance of winning. I don't think he has a chance of winning. So to answer the question, is he my top three? No, but I think you should bring up his name when you say, hey, you know, like I think Chris Paul doesn't get enough talk. I still think Giannis doesn't get enough talk. You know, Jokic is tough, like you said, because of his record. I think Embiid's going to win this, unless he gets hurt and misses the rest of the season. I think this is Embiid's to lose. And there was people who said, well, the Harden trade is going to hurt that. Harden's not playing until at least after the All-Star break. And when he comes back, it's still going to be, you know, it's going to be Harden shooting those threes that Seth was current. I don't think it takes away anything from what Embiid is doing. If anything, it might even open it up a little bit more because Harden will get more attention defensively and it might actually make his life easier. All right. Here's the last one. I think you already know my answer. However, is Matthew Stafford a Hall of Famer?
No. And I'm going to say that one more time for the people in the cheap seats. No. Emphatically, no. And the reason why I want to say that to you guys is because I want you to erase, even though we can't, let's not even erase it, Tone. Let's keep this on the table. Matt Stafford just won a Super Bowl. Now let's go throughout the rest of his career. Zero times he made the All-Pro team. You know how I feel about being an All-Pro, Tone. You know how I feel about being an All-NBA performer, All-League defender. Zero All-Pros in 12 years, not one time. How many times did he make the Pro Bowl? Uno. One time. That's it, right? So, with that being said, at what point, when we talk about Matt Stafford throughout his prime, because we are in year, what is this, 12 now, Tone?
13.
Okay, we're in year 13. At what point can you honestly say Matt Stafford was a top five quarterback in the game? I can't say that. And the reason why I can't say that, or not even a top five quarterback, a top eight quarterback, was he elite? He was great. But was he one of those guys? And I feel the same way about Eli Manning. I'm a huge Eli Manning fan. Four-time Pro Bowler, never made the All-Pro team. I got a problem with that. So Matt Stafford, another guy, never made the All-Pro team. One Pro Bowl, just won a Super Bowl in year 13. No, I don't think so.
Here's the problem. Matthew Stafford is, I'm looking it up, I think he's like 5 yards shy of 50,000 yards. Which puts him number 12 all-time in passing yards, which puts him right in between John Elway and Fran Tarkington.
Oh, my God.
He now has a Super Bowl ring. He is the fastest quarterback to hit 20,000 yards. It only took him 71 games. He's the fastest quarterback to 30,000 yards. It took him 109 games. He is the fastest quarterback to 40,000 games. 147 it took him. He's number 11 in completions, right behind Aaron Rodgers. He's number 12 with 322 touchdown passes, again, between Tarkenton and Elway. The list of those things go on and on and on. So here's my issue, and this is why I said you know how I'm going to answer. He's not a Hall of Famer, but he is. But he is. And here's why he's a Hall of Famer, because the Hall of Fame is broken. And the people that are in today, when you put his statistics and his numbers and now the Super Bowl, in comparison to guys that are in, you can't not put him in. Because he's in that elite class with yards and completions and touchdowns and now a Super Bowl win. So talent-wise, maybe I actually think Matthew Stafford is a Hall of Fame talent. I think like he can show those throws that he makes, but Hall of Fame isn't based on talent. It's not based on the eye test. The Hall of Fame, and maybe this is where it's flawed, the Hall of Fame is based on numbers. That's what I always tell people. Blind yourself with this eye test nonsense when you're talking Hall of Fame, because no one gives a crap about you looked pretty in that uniform. They look at your numbers, because in 30 years from now, no one's going back. People say, I go back and I study. No, you don't. You went on YouTube and you saw 5 minutes of highlights and you made a decision, or you Googled, you know, is this person the best player because you think they are, and someone who agreed with you and you watch them and say, yep, here's all the proof, right? You look for validation of your opinion. That's not research. That's not research. Is I'm going to go sit there and watch, you know, 14 hours of game film.
Like we did when you was younger, you actually saw Kobe Bryant.
Well,
you
were there. I don't want to keep bringing that up, but yes, watching the, and then see, because listen, I told you this, Rick Pitino gave me the best. Thank you, Coach Pitino, for this. The best piece of advice ever when I was at his camp back in, I won't say when, he said, who is the player you want to be like the most on the court? And I said, this one. And he said, okay, don't look at anything else. Watch that player. So when I research a player, I watch a game and I only look at that player and I see what they do off ball. I see what they do when, you know, the ball's on the other side of the court defensively. Are there, you know, are their hands on their hips and they're taking a breath, or are they in help defense getting ready to go in for a block for a steal or whatever the case may be? I look at those things. Mm-hmm. That's another conversation. The Hall of Fame is based on, because people aren't going to do that. The Hall of Fame voters aren't doing that. They're not doing that. They're going to know what the perception is, what the, you know, the narrative is about that player. Oh, he was a jerk. I'm not voting for him. Oh, he lied about his COVID. I'm not voting for him. Right. Like they'll use that. And then, and most importantly, they look at numbers and they'll look at this and say, okay. And don't forget, he's not done. He's still got at least 5 years left. So he's going to go above it. But they'll look and say, okay, well, yards, he's in between Elway and Tarkenton. Well, those guys are Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. Completions. Oh, he's right behind Aaron Rodgers. Well, he's a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. Touchdowns. Tarkenton and
Elway.
And Elway again. Well, mm-hmm. they're both Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. Did he win it? Did he win a big game? Did he win the Super? Yes, he did. Not only that, people look at game-winning drives. Mm-hmm. Listen to this. Matthew Stafford started 0-3, as we know, in his playoff record with the Lions. Mm-hmm. He's now 4-3 because he won four games in a row. In those four games, he had three game-winning drives. Do you know who that puts him one ahead of, who only has two?
John Elway.
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers has how many Super Bowl wins? Matthew Stafford has how many Super Bowl wins? He's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Deserving, or, and maybe he is deserving. Again, because I think the Hall of Fame is broken. Mm-hmm. So in the broken Hall of Fame, he's a Hall of Famer. Yeah. So congratulations, Matthew Stafford. I've already given you a gold job. And what a blasphemy. Just let me rant. I know we're past time and we need to end the show. However, the fact that Devin Hester is not in the Hall of Fame is blasphemous. He is the greatest player at his position ever in the history of football. So much so that you had to change the rules to stop what he was doing.
That matters. When you're changing the rules, that matters.
And when someone says to me, well, he was just special teams, I wish we were in person so that I could slap you upside the head, because kickers are in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, they are.
Is it not three facets of the game, offense, defense, and special team, and they're all equal? So why does a quarterback always have to get in and a lineman has to fight to get in and the special teams guy, well, did anyone influence a game? Just think about this. The 2006 Bears with Rex Grossman at quarterback went to the Super Bowl and had a chance to win. Why? Because of their defense and Devin Hester. Mm-hmm. Without Devin Hester, they're not in the Super Bowl. Just think about that.
He's the first return man that in all my years of watching football, he's the first return man that I've ever seen that we're not kicking him the ball.
We're not kicking him the ball. We're not kicking.
We're not kicking.
Because when you do, like the Colts did on the first play of the Super Bowl, he takes it to the house.
This is what's going to happen. Kick the ball in the end zone. That's what you do. When he's back there, kick the ball in the end zone.
I want to say this again because I'm gonna tag Devin in this. The 2006 Chicago Bears are not in the Super Bowl without Devin Hester. He is a Hall of Famer. Period.
Yeah.
Okay, I got that off my chest. I feel better. You know, this is such a good show because it's therapy too. It's you know how much money I'd be spending in therapy if I didn't have you, Jay? All right, man. All right, so Friday. Mm-hmm. Friday's big. We're going to talk, because we didn't talk about what's going to happen next. We just talked about what happened in the Super Bowl. So we're talking a little bit about what's coming in the offseason, because we're going to do some new kind of cool things in the offseason in terms of the draft, mm-hmm. free agency. We might even have on a guest or two to talk some football. But on Friday, I'm going to be Kevin Durant. Jay is going to be his guy, LeBron James. Mm-hmm. We're going to draft an all-star team. Then not only are we going to draft an all-star team, we're going to talk about why my team's going to win or your team's going to win.
Right.
We'll have that discussion. Let's see who's the better GM. Let's see who's the better GM. So that's Friday on Fluid to Chill. And don't forget to check us out Monday, 8 p.m. live. It was another great one this Monday. So Monday live on TikTok. But until then,
take it light, but take it.